because nobody is ever satisfied with just one.
Left for McNabb, bottom of the circle. From the corner, he saucered in front. Stone scores! Flips it in out of midair on a centering pass by McNabb.
We're back with another helping of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
5 seconds to go. Fever, another shot blocked on the outside. 2-1 goes across the slot, and the game is over. Vegas survives and marches on to the second round.
Streaming at lvsportsnetwork.com and live from the Richard Harris Law Firm Studios, it's Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Make it happen on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Holiday weekend, and I hope you enjoyed anything that you were able to do to step outside the comfort zone of the work schedule. And we're back at it on Fox Sports Las Vegas with the VGK Insider Show. Darren Millard, Ryan Wallace, and Chris Chapman, who's trying to figure out how to say certain words, and we'll test him at the end with catching up with Chapman. Just about to get underway. Game 4 between Edmonton and Dallas. Before the puck has dropped, and we've had so many early goals, do you have a gut feeling on which way Game 4 will go in this series?
I'll say that I think the Dallas Stars win this game, mainly because I think the Dallas Stars win the series, and I think going down 3-1 is not a recipe for that to actually happen. So I like the Dallas Stars. I feel like Dallas comes out and they have a big game in this one, and they win this Game 4.
I'm with you on that. I really am confident that the Dallas Stars will find the game. I think they play better, certainly, than a 2-1 deficit goes. We'll see where that takes them and whether or not Edmonton, who won 4 straight to dispatch the Los Angeles Kings after falling behind in the series, can do a similar performance against the Dallas Stars, who won game number one. So Dallas has had so much trouble in series openers over the years, been able to battle through and battle back. This is different. They started off on their right foot, and they weren't able to carry it over. Now, you could say they're in their comfort zone before. Like, this doesn't bother them, and it shouldn't bother them based on what we've seen in them. So that's one of the reasons why I am more optimistic or comfortable in a Dallas Stars performance.
I feel like they have gotten better as the series has worn on, and like, we can't really forget how they came by that game one victory. They were trailing 3-1 going into the third period, and their power play absolutely took over in the third period of game number one, and that's really why they ended up winning that game. But I think in totality, top to bottom, their game has gotten better and better as this series has gone on, game to game. And so now you're just looking to put it all together with some finishing, right? Like, this is a team that can hold on to pucks, they can create on the rush or in zone. Now they've just got to find a way to actually execute and put the puck in the back of the net. I think they will tonight.
Power plays, we'll see how much that plays out. Two coaches, different approaches. Seen some friskiness from Pete DeBoer with the media, and same old from Chris Knobloch, who is as low-key as any coach you're going to find. He's not dynamic with the media, but is good, gives you good answers. Is not emotional behind the bench, but seems to make the right decisions. Knobloch could go down as one of those, how and why did it take him so long to receive a National Hockey League opportunity?
That's fair, because, I mean, you look at his resume, right? At the National Hockey League level, all he's done is win. But the way that he conducts himself is just really, really wild. Like, I was listening to his media availability from earlier today, and he is just calm. He is just incredibly, incredibly calm.
And, well-spoken and calm. Well, he's reading from a script, but he's not.
Yeah, there's no excitement in his voice. You don't really know if he's leaning one way or another emotionally. He's just very, very well-spoken, calm, and direct in his assessment of his team, in his assessment of what he's expecting out of the game. Like, kind of his commentary on Victor Arvidsson, right? Like, it was a tough decision pulling Arvidsson out of the lineup. He's going to return to the lineup tonight. And what the expectations are. Yeah, it's difficult to have those conversations with players, but you know, if you're getting that from Chris Knobloch and he's expecting you to pick right back up because of how calm and rational he is, I think that you're able to do that as a player. He's very, very different from the guy that he took over for, that's for sure.
So he was an assistant coach in the Western Hockey League for a couple of years when he decided he wanted to go down this path. He played 1 year minor pro following a five-year career in Canadian University, Canadian College. Okay, junior player, but not great, not dynamic by any means at all. Draft pick of the New York Islanders, but a seventh-round pick. Then he coached in the minors. Mm-hmm. So whether or major junior, Kootenay Ice, Erie Otters, and then he turned professional as assistant with Philadelphia Flyers. I was a head coach in the American Hockey League for 4 years, and then he gets his chance. Like, he was there for a long time and won a Western Hockey League championship, won an OHL championship, coached Connor McDavid. And he was always there, but it's almost like his personality worked against him, that he wasn't dynamic enough. And I don't get the sense that Chris, and I've only met him a few times, he's not that talker, that worker to get his name out there. And there's a lot of those guys. and I talk to them, and guys that try to get their name out there, and you do as much. I don't do it nearly as much as you used to, but when you see a random name or the same name coming up that doesn't necessarily fit, those are guys that are working the media. Say, hey, can you just mention my drop my name? Happens a ton. Didn't hear a lot of Knobloch over the years. Yeah. And the fact that he coached in two leagues, the Ontario League and the Western League, and won them both, coached high-profile players like Dylan Strom and Connor McDavid, played or coached in two high-profile organizations in Philadelphia and the New York Ranger organization with the Hartford Wolfpack. It honestly looked like he was going to be a career minor league coach. He's only has been 40. He got started this a long time. But he did a lot of coaching before spending time as a head coach in the National Hockey League. There was 2 years as an assistant in Philadelphia, and they went back to the American Hockey League. And sometimes you do have to do that. You got to get some experience in the AHL or NHL, but then run your own team in the AHL. And like Ryan Craig would be a great example of that.
Yeah.
But Ryan Craig doesn't have the junior hockey coaching resume that I think would have or should have in a lot of instances, given him an earlier crack at a head coaching job in the National Hockey League. Ryan Craig came right from playing assistant coach in the National Hockey League, wins a Stanley Cup, and then goes and runs his own team in the American Hockey League with the Henderson Silver Knights. And that helps him, because he's already been an assistant in the NHL. He know can do that, but he wants to run his team. He wants to be a National Hockey League head coach. That's what he's doing. Chris has run his own team at a high level, like he did in the OHL and the WHL. And because of that just comfortable personality, I don't know whether he was passed over because he didn't jump off the page to people. That's the only way I can explain why he's been able to do what he's done so effectively at the National Hockey League level.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting way to kind of put it, because it almost seems like you needed the right fit for, you know, a team that needed what Knobloch brings to the table. Like, there are some teams that need a fiery coach, that need a guy that's going to go out there and, you know, is going to be emotional or wear his emotions on his sleeves to a certain extent, whether it be through the media, whether it be in the room, whatever the case. But, you know, there are other teams, and I think the Oilers were kind of a prime example of this at the time, where, you know, they needed calm. They needed what Knobloch brings to the table, like this reassurance of, hey, we're a good team. We just have to go out there and do our thing, and we can't be focused on anything that isn't necessarily that goal. And I just wonder if that's the case, if you are just that person, you can't fake anything else. Like, you can't fake being overly emotional or getting fired up. If it's not in your nature. And I just wonder if it was the right place at the right time and the right fit for Knobloch to be able to do what he's doing right now.
And there are people that think that Connor McDavid advocated for him. I don't think that's the case. I know Jeff Jackson is the president. Is the title. He's in the role of president of the Edmonton Oilers. Not the general manager. And Jeff was Connor McDavid's agent for his time in the National Hockey League before taking the Oilers' job. And Jeff was aware of Chris Knobloch when he was Connor's agent, and Connor was in Erie with the Otters of the OHL. And Chris Knobloch won that championship with Connor. I don't think that Connor did that, but I do believe that there was conversations about, what do you think of Knobloch, between Jeff and Connor? Because let me just move back. If Connor's got that much influence in the Oilers, then he would have got Jeff the job, and I don't think he got Jeff the job, Jackson the job. There is some certainly a relationship there, but I do not believe him in any fashion that it was Connor McDavid going, get Jeff Jackson in here. So it's unfair to say Connor McDavid went to Jeff Jackson and said, get Chris Knobloch in here. And the awareness of Jeff Jackson to have watched Chris Knobloch coach was a natural fit, but it was also a leap. And the New York Rangers, like, they've just changed coaches. They had Chris Knobloch in their organization for 5 years and didn't go down that path. And so the idea that Connor was banging the drum for this guy is unfair to Chris Knobloch, but it certainly does reveal that there was missed opportunities by plenty of organizations along the way to not have hired him.
That's incredibly fair, and, you know, I think you're bringing up the New York Rangers and just kind of how much turnover there's been there with head coach and kind of how that team has kind of gone up and down. You wonder if that calm stability would have been something that worked there, or, you know, if the room was just a little bit too fractured. But, you know, I do think when you've got a player like Connor McDavid who has had success with this coach in the past, if, you know, those connections, or wondering about those connections, or wondering if it was Connor that led the charge, I think it's always going to be there just based on their past. But obviously, you know, there's something with Chris Knobloch that just works. He's a really good coach. He knows what he's doing, and he's been able to get the most out of his players. And I'm not talking about McDavid and Dreisaitl. You know those guys are going to get theirs, but the fact of the matter is Knobloch's got everybody playing incredibly well. And, you know, we've remarked on it. We remarked on it in round number two about the Edmonton Oilers and their depth and how long it can continue. Well, through three games in the Western Conference Final, it's not showing any signs of slowing down, and that's a credit to Knobloch and what he's done this year.
Outcoached a couple of pretty good guys along the way. Not outcoached, but beat some impressive guys. Todd McClellan he got past Vegas this year. And I don't think that there's many coaches who can adjust and game plan better than Bruce Cassidy. And Chris Knobloch found a way to maneuver his roster where they were able to win in five games. Pete DeBoer, he beat Pete last year. He's up on Pete this year. And see Pete's record. In the Senate. He never won, but he's been to this third round so many times that I give him credit. I wanted to go down this path and play this game of what kind of rosters are we looking at historically in 10 years? When you look back at the 2025 Oilers and Panthers and Hurricanes and Dallas Stars, will you wonder, how did they get this far? Or will you ask yourself, how did they not win multiple cups? And we'll do it by Hall of Famers.
Okay.
Which is as good of a sign of a elite team as anything. Now, sometimes it doesn't work. How many Hall of Famers will the 2023 Vegas Golden Knights have? That was built more on depth. Some really good players, but how many like true Hall of Famers will come from that group? Maybe a couple?
Yeah.
So the Oilers, you've got Dreisaitl, Hall of Famer.
Yep.
McDavid, Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, great career. Not going to be Hall of Famer.
No.
On the fringe, you've got impactful players. Zach Hyman scored a ton of goals last year.
Not a Hall of
Famer. He's going to have to do some pretty spectacular things to get to a Hall of Fame. Corey Perry, Hall of Famer.
Yep. I'm with you there.
So there's three. Evander Kane, has had a really impactful career. But I would say on the outside there, we'll have to see with Evan Bouchard if he gets there. I don't think he defends well enough, but puts up a ton of points. Can he win a Norris in this era of Hughes and Makar?
I mean, if he brings his playoff game to the regular season, he might be able to, right?
Yeah. And I think his regular season game is really good.
Well, I'm just saying from a point production standpoint.
It's really good in the regular season. Defensively, I question him.
It's fair.
He falls into lapses during the season, and he's been better than I expected. That defensive core, better than I expected. In goal, there's no Hall of Famers on
not
the Edmonton Oilers. So we got three, right?
Yep, three.
Perry, McDavid.
Dreisaitl,
the Heartline.
Yep.
When they play together. In Dallas, and I'll go through it alphabetically. Rupe Hintz, no.
No. Not yet.
Wyatt Johnson, we don't know. There's something there. Tyler Seguin, closer than you'd say. But
I'd say fringe there, eh?
Yeah, like, but Hall of Fame, no. I would no right now. Certainly not. Not like, Hall of Famer. Jamie Benn, if he wins, and there's individual accomplishments by Jamie Benn.
Scoring title.
Yep. Yep. There's
a trophy.
There's that aspect to it. Jamie Benn, if he wins, I'll put him in that category. Robertson, don't know. On a path towards it.
Yep.
But not there.
Yeah, I could see it, but it's going to have to be the Jason Robertson of a couple of years ago, for sure.
Mikko Rantanen on the inside?
Yeah. I think ultimately when it's all said and done, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Heiskanen, yes.
Yep.
And in goal, we don't know with Jake Oettinger. Okay. Having a great career and can turn it into an elite career in the matter of two accomplishments, a Vezina and a Stanley Cup.
Yep.
Thomas Harley, we don't know yet. So yeah. I've got three Hall of Famers on the Dallas Stars right now. Same Rantanen, as the Edmonton Oilers.
Rantanen and Ben and Heiskanen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty similar there.
Yeah.
Carolina. Aho.
I thought we weren't doing Carolina.
Well, let's work through
it. Fine. It's fine.
Aho, good career. Mm-hmm. Not quite Hall of Famer yet. Yeah. Seth Jarvis, not right now. Jordan Staal, long career.
I think he's fringe.
Yeah.
I don't think he's guaranteed.
The career numbers.
Yeah.
The career numbers of Jordan Staal make you take notice.
Yeah.
Because
he's been incredibly good and consistent for a long, long time. I think he's fringe, but I
even at, in his mid 30s, he continues to be great.
Yeah.
Career wise, he's over 1,000 games, not 1,000 points, but that's not bad. He's about a half a point per game guy. You look at goals, and he's 20 goal guy, but never a 30 goal guy. Like he's getting in on the lifetime achievement category.
It's fair.
Yeah, Taylor it's Hall. Fair. There's an interesting one.
Yeah.
He's got the Hart trophy.
You're right.
He
won best player in the league.
Yeah.
Well, first overall pick. Has had some good years, but you know, the most goals he's ever scored in a year. I was looking this up today. 39. That was in his Hart trophy year.
Yeah.
It's the only time he ever scored 30. Only once. Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yeah, that's wild.
He's going to play 1,000 games. Yeah. He's going to have more points than Jordan Staal. But
never a 100-point season.
Well, he's always a guy, and this will work against him. He's a guy that you expected more production out of.
Yep.
Even though he's got the MVP. Even though he's had some solid influences on teams, you're always going to look at him as wanting more. Now, sure. If he ever won, and
changes the conversation.
He's like the unspoken gem of the Mikko Rantanen fallout.
Yeah.
Like somehow Chicago included him in that trade when Rantanen went from Colorado to Carolina. And he got a 3-year contract out of it. He was really good down the stretch with Carolina. So I think there's still a chance there. He's just running out of time to do something special. But I don't wanna write him off just because I expected more from him. I would love him to have more of an influence on this series than he's had. And on the blue line, Brent Burns. Burns I would put in the Hall of Fame.
I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I do. He fits the criteria. He's played forever. He is at times throughout his career has been just a driving force on the blue line. He played on some phenomenal teams and was a big, big part of some of those, you know, San Jose teams that had great regular seasons but couldn't get it done in the playoffs. I would say it's a slam dunk if he wins a championship, but I think right now Brent Burns is a Hall of Famer for sure.
So we got one and then two maybes. Sounds Carolina about Hurricanes. Right, yeah. And that's that fits what you watch.
That's who they are.
And you look.
Yeah, that's who they are.
Now, Florida. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, Edmonton had 3.
Yep. Yep.
The Dallas Stars had 3. Mm-hmm. Let's go down to Florida. And Sasha Barkov.
Yes.
He absolutely. With his 200-foot game, I think is great. Only 2 times above 30 goals, but a lock to score 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
from 15, 16 on, he scored 20 goals every year. And that's through the COVID years. So no discussion there.
No.
Maybe not 100%. First ballot,
No, but he's a Hall of Famer.
But he will get into the Hall of Fame, and he will get his plaque. Sam Bennett. Now, he's not there yet.
No.
But boy, has he ever made a charge in the back half of his career. Good player to okay player in Calgary. Calgary, good player to okay player. He was a first round pick in Calgary, fourth overall. So your Tyler Seguin type expectations. Mm-hmm. But never scored 20 goals until after he got to Florida. He's done it three times. And a beast when it comes to physical play, and that has been unlocked in Florida. And you can say penalty minutes are undisciplined, or you can say penalty minutes are intimidating. He falls into the latter, where he can absolutely crush. Sam Bennett, if he wins another title, there'll be no individual accomplishments here, trophies, but I think he's on the fringe of that. If you want to put him in the same category of some of the other players, a Seguin type of situation. Now, Bennett doesn't have the individual, but the absolute beast of a hockey. Like, he is a hockey player.
He is a winner, and he's built for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's more opportunity for Sam Bennett to win a Conn Smythe than there is for him to make the Hall of Fame right now. But
he's more chance to win a Conn Smythe than any type of individual trophy.
Sure,
during the regular season.
That's fair too. That's fair too. I would put him in the fringe, but I don't view Sam Bennett as a Hall of Famer right now. I just don't.
Yeah, there's a possibility there that he can unlock that door.
Yeah.
And the
win two championships, put a Conn Smythe on his name, like
good player in Calgary.
Yeah.
But nothing like what we've seen against from the Florida Panther perspective.
Yeah.
Really, really impressive. How about Sam Reinhart? Would you have ever considered Sam Reinhart as a Hall of Famer in Buffalo?
No.
Good player.
Yeah,
high draft pick.
Player. Yep.
Second overall. Mm-hmm. Good player. 20 goals every year, but 17. And he scored 17. But those Buffalo years, he wasn't the problem there.
No.
But he goes to Florida after being a perennial 20-goal scorer and hits 30 for the first time, does it again, scores 57.
Yep.
Knocks on the door of 40 this year. Four Nations guy. Sam Reinhart is on track based on career numbers, especially later on in his career, and he's part of a good team. I'm gonna put Sam Reinhart in right now.
That's fine with me. I think the trajectory is there for Sam Reinhart to be a Hall of Famer. So I'm with you. That's fine.
Reinhart, Barkov are in. Sam Bennett's on the fence now.
Yep.
Brad Marchand played his whole career in Boston, but he's on Florida right now. He's in.
Sure. Yeah.
And then you go down to Matthew Tkachuk.
Yep.
He's gonna be in.
Yeah, Hall of Famer.
So that's four. Mm-hmm. On the blue line. Ekblad, no. Jones, no. Kulikov, no. Some good players there. They're doing this without a Hall of Famer on their back end.
Yeah, it's fair.
And in goal, you've got a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
in
Hall of Famer.
Sergei Bobrovsky.
Yep.
Now, that's five. Does it surprise you that there's five Hall of Famers plus a couple of fringe guys? By far the most, almost doubles everybody else. That surprise you? Because it did me when I went through it today.
A little bit.
I didn't think there'd be that. They're all even, very even teams coming into the final four, to the conference finals. But boy, and is that Florida impressiveness because we've seen them from President's Trophy to back-to-back finals to going to third? Is it recency bias? Maybe a little bit.
Probably,
but, like,
yeah.
No doubters, Barkov, Marchand,
Bob.
Goaltender, Bob.
Yeah.
Kachuk,
I would say,
Kachuk will get in there.
Yeah. Like, it's interesting because, like, I don't know that I would – the Sam Bennett conversation is interesting in the similar vein of Sam Reinhart because I don't know that when those players left Calgary and Buffalo, you would have them in this conversation. But then they get to Florida and they absolutely blossom. And then I would make the same argument for Matthew Tkachuk. Like, he was good in Calgary for sure, but he has been an absolute beast for the Florida Panthers since that trade went through and since becoming a Panther. So I just think that, you know, whether it's what they're doing in Florida or how they're bringing out the best of everybody here, I don't know, but there are at least three players that we're looking at with the Panthers that before they got to Florida, I don't think they're in this conversation, and since they got there, they are.
Yeah. Matthew Tkachuk was good in Calgary and has continued that in Florida. But Bennett and Reinhart, two different players.
Mm-hmm.
There. Bob won Vezina elsewhere. He's just been better in the playoffs in Florida. He might be the top of the line when it comes to who gets in first after they retire. I don't think there's a doubt when his eligibility is up, mm-hmm. he goes in.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Sergei Bobrovsky's the guy that kind of leads the charge there in terms of the potential Hall of Famers. He's the no doubter of all no doubters with this team.
We'll go around the National Hockey League. One-timers, news and notes coming up next on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner. Centered one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers.
One-timers.
A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
Update for you, Roope Hintz returns for the Dallas Stars in Game 4 of the Western Conference Final. Dallas trying to work their way back and tie this series at two wins apiece. That is the very latest on that front.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the game, it is something Edmonton. Leon Draisaitl just scored a power play goal, 11-22 from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Corey Perry. So it is 1-0 Edmonton, 8 minutes, 37 seconds left in the first period.
Playoff update brought to you by Centennial Subaru. Be the boss at Centennial Subaru. When Leon gets going, man.
Yeah, it's not good.
I had this debate with a couple of people during the Edmonton series between Vegas, and we weren't talking about Vegas specifically. It was more, who would you take? Or is there even a thought between Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl? If you had to pick between the two of them, Chapman, what would you do?
Oh, man. I don't know. You put me on the spot.
Connor McDavid's the best player in the world.
Yeah, but yeah. I like Draisaitl's grit. Mm. I think he's almost like a movable object, but I mean, I think when you put all the packages together and you have to go Connor. I mean, just for the fact that he's the best player in the world. And he can create something out of nothing. And, I mean, I think both of them are unbelievable
Leon
players.
Leon can do that, too.
Yeah, man.
I'm going Connor.
I'm going Connor.
It's a tougher conversation than I think a lot of people would give it credit for. There are things Leon does that are just otherworldly. His vision is passing, his ability there, but McDavid has all that plus an extra gear when it comes to speed. I think Chapman's right. I would stick with Connor, but there's something special with Leon Draisaitl too.
Yeah. You can't look at this and say, I'm going to pass on Connor McDavid.
No.
And
no,
if anybody tries to tell you that, they're looking for clicks. But I did, in the course of having the conversation, say I'm leery to admit it, but I did. It makes me think.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Leon Draisaitl, from a competitive standpoint, is wonderful. And his one-timer with everything else that he does is elite. Like, mm-hmm. not just tops in the game right now, but tops all time. He takes it from such a sharp angle and mm-hmm. never misses the net. It either goes off the goalie and in, or goes straight in, or the goalie stops it. He doesn't miss short side and causes team difficulty. It's one of the most fascinating things that I watch when I or intriguing things that I watch when it comes to the Edmonton Oilers, is that low sharp angle one timer, and then he's great on draws. He's mm-hmm. elite when it comes to scoring goals and points and individual accomplishments, and it's not Forsberg and Sakic, where they were 1A, 1B, both great players, but it's a lot closer to that than anybody probably would admit. I might pass on Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I think that's right. All three of us eventually got there, and it should come as no surprise to you that the Leon Draisaitl goal was a one-timer from the sharp angle.
Yeah. Chapman asked me a question during the commercial break as okay. we were working our way through Hall of Famers mm-hmm. on the four teams. What about the coaches? And when we'll limit it to the conference finalists, that's Chris Knobloch, and that's Pete DeBoer, and Rod Brind'Amour, and Paul Maurice, I think, can get there. Longevity and where he is at the top of games coached, or top five in games coached, and wins, also losses, because he's coached so many, many games. But the championship puts him in. And whether you want to admit it or not, being media savvy works into it.
Helps.
If you're a jerk to people all the time, and those people are on the selection committee, it's going to be a hard time to get it. Tom Barrasso, it took him forever to get into the Hall of Fame. And multi-Stanley Cup champion, rookie of the year, did it all. But he was a jerk to us. And people held that against him. So I thought, okay, if Rod Brind'Amour is not a Hall of Famer coach, great player, and has done wonderful things in Carolina since taking over from Bill Peters in a tough situation. And I would love to see what Rod could do on another organization where there's more assets there, more spending, more resources. Pete DeBoer's been to two finals, a lock to make the final four every year, but has never won. Career totals, really good. He should be in the conversation. I don't think he is yet, and I'll tell you that in a second. Chris Knobloch's just starting out, so no way. So I started looking through Hall of Fame inductees as coaches. Now, it goes through the builder category. There's not a specific a Hall of Fame coach. You're inducted under the builder umbrella. 2 years ago, Ken Hitchcock went in, 2023. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the most recent coach before that was 2016 in Pat Quinn. Huh. So you're 7 years between any coach going in. Pat Burns went in 14. Fred Shiro, who won mm-hmm. two cups with the Philadelphia Flyers in the mid-70s, he didn't get in until 2013.
Yeah.
Other coaches that went in, Herb Brooks in 2006, that was for the Olympic accomplishment, more so. Brian Kilray, a junior hockey coach, but never was a head coach in the National Hockey. Roger Nielsen went in. Again, a guy that was very media savvy and changed some of the game with his video work. And Glenn Sather, Al Arbor, both went in the mid-90s. But from there, not a lot of guys. Like, there's a real drought of coaches being inducted mm-hmm. from the mid 90s to earlier. Scotty Bowman in 1991, tough to argue there. But the rest of it, like it's hard for coaches,
yeah,
to get in even if you have cups. It's a different. I feel like they're judged differently, and I've never thought about it until our conversation today, spurred by Chris Chapman.
It almost seems like there should be a separate category.
I agree. Yeah.
For coaches specifically, because when you're limiting it to builder and you've got, you know, general managers and different aspects that you're trying to look at in that regard, you can look over some coaches. And, you know, I think it's probably time, just based on, you know, what some recent coaches have been able to do. Like you look at John Cooper and you look at, you know, just guys that have done a lot of winning, Mike Sullivan, when they are done, they should be in that conversation. They should be there. So we'll see. But it almost seems like there should be a separate category for coaches specifically.
I wonder if that would open it up to too many coaches getting in.
I
kind of like the way you have to be elite, elite, elite.
But then if you have to be elite, elite, elite as a coach, you should have to be elite, elite, elite as a player.
Yeah.
And I would make the argument that there have been some selections over the last 8 or 10 years from a player perspective that have not been the elite of the elite.
Yeah, and I haven't minded them. There was a period where it was a lower bar than I would have liked. And I'm not going to diminish the accomplishments of the people that publicly, that the people that I believe shouldn't have got in.
Yeah.
But I think it's in a much better place now than it was in the late, I won't even give you
that's,
a year,
that's,
a window.
That's fine. That's totally fine. You don't have to. But I guess my point is, if you're going to hold the coaches to that standard, then you should hold everybody that gets into the Hall of Fame to that standard, players included.
Which players?
I'm not going to like...
They'd be on the fringe anyway. So, because I don't think anybody's got in recently that didn't deserve to get in. So I'm going back a ways on my list. Who do you think maybe...
I guess for me it's more about who's not in. Like, you know, how in the world Alexander Mogilny's not in the Hall of Fame, I'll never understand it.
So is there somebody that you would have put in?
I would have put Mogilny in before Paul Kariya.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I'm just saying, like, from
But that's a debate. That's a good debate.
Sure.
That's not a what are they thinking type thing. A couple of people that I have in my mind are like, what were you thinking? This was the one year that they ever could have got in, and you squeezed it through. I love Hall of Fame debates.
Oh boy, I do. I need to know who that player is now.
Yeah, it probably would be hard to find out if you look through it. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Catching Up with Chapman on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Oh, Christopher.
Hi, Darren. So yesterday, my wife and I went to, I guess it's just called Sphere, not The Sphere. And we went to go see the movie Postcards from Planet Earth. Oh, my God. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. It was only about 45 minutes, and that's really all you need to immerse yourself in this. I've never seen anything like it. The only time previous I had been in Sphere was for the NHL draft. This was unreal. Now I got to go see a concert there. Like, I don't know who I'm going to go see. I've got to go see something there because I was so blown away, and my wife could not believe just how unbelievable this movie was and how immersive it was. Unreal. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It was incredible.
Could not believe how unbelievable it was.
It was unbelievable.
That's unbelievable.
Couldn't believe it. Donkey.